Hey everyone, this is episode 206 of This Week in Marketing. I'm your host, Sajid, and today I'm going over the notable news and updates from the week of April 1 through April 5, 2024. First up, we have an update on Google's March 2024 core update. So if you have not heard, Google actually released a core update in March, and that's why it's called the March 2024 core update, and a lot of websites were affected by it. So what that basically means is people have been asking questions, small business owners have been scratching their head, and Google's John Mueller has provided some clarity and advice on how to address these changes, especially for those who have experienced a downturn in website performance. And by website performance, what I mean over here is that your website no longer shows up on Google search, or maybe you have lost ranking and so forth. Okay. And just so that you know, the March 2024 update it's been known to have a very wider, broad impact. Okay. And usually core updates are comprehensive, affecting various parts of the search algorithm, including how sites are ranked, indexed based on content quality, user experience, and many factors. Now, one thing that you really need to know is Mueller is saying, do not rush into making changes while an update is still rolling out. Like if you remember in our show, we often say, hey, we will let you know when this update is completed, and usually it's a 2-week period or 3-week period, and Google usually announces when the update period is over. The reason, and Mueller is saying, do not run, because I feel like, you know, because they're still, Google is still going through the index, its own index and ranking and things like that, and basically it may not have finished doing its job, quote unquote, and then you're making changes and just complicating things, and maybe the Google engine, the Google bot already has billions, if not trillions, of websites in his system. So it's going to be like, to hell with it. Let's move on. Okay. So Mueller is saying that this is because full effects, and this is what he says, this is because the full effects and intentions of the update might not be immediately clear. Premature adjustments could inadvertently harm your site's performance further. Mueller emphasized, however, if there are clear areas for improvement on your site, especially those unrelated to the core update's specific focus, it's always a good time to address them. Now, I wouldn't do anything. I mean, it's like you want to wait till the storm is over, then do that. Okay. Other than that, a specific area highlighted for attention was the use of paid links or aggressive link building strategies, which can negatively impact your site's ranking. And this is something that was covered in the last episode, episode 205. Give it a listen and read the show notes where I say, you know, you really paid links, backlinks really do not help you a whole lot. And again, it's not my saying, it's what I believe in. And Mueller kind of backed me up, or Mueller kind of laid it out and backed up my claims, what I've been saying. Backlinks are good if you get it organically. Now, if you're paying someone to do it, backlinks, Mueller said in that episode, or I said in that episode, which Mueller said was, you're better off focusing on creating good quality content. And lastly, he said, Mueller, in this episode or in this context, Mueller is saying to diversify your traffic sources to reduce dependency on search engine rankings. Huh. Mr. Mueller, it's easy for you to say that, but a lot of businesses get new business from Google, and it's free. It's usually free or the cheapest, because you know, you surface up, people searching for your product, so, and then you get found, right? Anything else, whether it's influencer marketing, social media marketing, and I'm pretty sure every businesses are doing it, so they're already diversifying. However, you know, paid ads can be expensive and the cost does go up over time. SEO is good, and obviously this is why a lot of businesses focus on this. It's just that fact that, you know, a lot of business owners fall into the trap of this SEO experts or gurus or professionals who kind of take them down the rabbit hole, or just basically sell them a bunch of service and things like that, which does not really make any sense. Okay, with that, I think you should take a look at the show notes if you really want to see what Mueller is saying, but there isn't really anything else. There is just that, you know, if there are changes happening, kind of wait up and then let the storm pass and then go make changes. Okay, now the other thing is Google's Gary Illes talked about canonical pages and how Google really indexes or takes into account for canonical pages. Now, well, the easiest thing you can do is you can put the canonical tags on your web page and then they say, hey, Google, this is the most authoritative version of this page. So if there are copies of this page elsewhere, ignore that and use this as the authoritative version. Now, if you don't do that, and sometimes if you don't do that, Google is going to make their own distinctions. Now, that's not based on what it's based on Google's own criteria, right? So first of all, what you need to know is that it's a very tedious process or meticulous process. It's first Google will determine if a page is a duplicate and then selects the most suitable version for indexing. This selection is critical as typically only canonical pages are displayed in the search results. So first of all, folks, if you have duplicate content where you are putting the same content in your LinkedIn and on your site or in another blog or another, and if your goal is to bring the traffic back onto your site, you might as well put that rel equals canonical tag on your page. If you're not doing it, you're letting someone else decide for you. Hey, you've been warned, it's up to you. Okay, so now Google uses a variety of signals to make this decision, ranging from straightforward indicators like site owners and annotations, example, like I said, rel equals to canonical tags already complete, to more complex ones such as pages overall significance on the internet. Now, if you go to Yahoo News, you will see Yahoo News scrapes a lot of content from other websites. So in a case like this, if Yahoo News is scraping your content, Yahoo News is going to surface up, bubble up, just because they have more, in my opinion, they have more probably significance on the internet than probably you are on my website. The importance of this process cannot be understated as it directly impacts how content is presented in search results, especially for pages with multiple variants, example, product pages with different sizes or colors. Gary's discussion also touches on the concept of duplicate clustering, where Google groups similar content together, and the notion of centerpiece content, which refers to the main content of a page that helps in the deduplication process. It's a very fancy, I guess, algorithm. Basically, all I'm saying is, if you really can help it, folks, mark your page as canonical, or you could copy someone else's content in, and if they don't have the canonical tag, you put it on your page and you kind of go up. Now, that's a very evil way to do things. But hey, if they're not doing it, you can claim it. I guess don't hold it against me. Next up, the role of content quality in Google's indexing process. This is, again, from Google's Gary Illes. By the way, this is a YouTube video, so there is a link to this YouTube video in my show notes. Go ahead and check it out if you really want to hear what Illes had to say. But basically saying, you know, how the significant role of content quality plays in determining web page's crawl frequency and its ranking in its search results. So the indexing process involves a comprehensive analysis of a page's textual content, including tags, attributes, images, and videos. During this stage, Google assesses various signals to gauge the page's quality. A critical takeaway for small business owner is the concept of index selection. This step decides whether a page makes it into Google Index, a decision heavily influenced by the page's quality and the signals collected during the initial assessment. Gary emphasizes that even if a page is technically sound, it might not be indexed if it doesn't meet Google's quality threshold. This underscores the importance of creating high-quality content that is not only relevant and informative, but also engages the target audience effectively. Google has expressed an intention to conserve crawling resources by focusing on pages that weren't crawling, further stressing the need for content to meet high quality standards. Now, folks, this is true. And Google is looking into moving into things like an index now that Bing has, where you know you are going to send information to Google and Google is going to decide if they want to crawl or not. But again, this is more on the, I guess, rumor side. So don't believe on it. But yeah, Google, it's expensive for Google to kind of come in and crawl your pages. So if it, because you know it costs them CPU, which is server bandwidth and all those processing power, storing and things like that. So Google wants to make sure that they have high quality content. Anyways, moving on. In addition to the quality assessment, Gary also delved into Google's approach to duplicate content, which I already covered in that last update. So I'm going to skip that. So for you, the business owner, this information is invaluable. At least to me, I feel that way. Ensuring your content meets Google's quality standards can significantly enhance your website's visibility in search results. So here are the actionable steps to align your content with the standards. Content creation, focus on developing content that thoroughly addresses your audience needs and pain points. Tailor your content to reflect current search trends and demands. Content structure, make your content user-friendly. Structure it in an easily navigable format, and consider implementing schema markup to aid Google in understanding the context of your content. Now, schema markup is something that we have covered in our show as it comes up. If you haven't, you should look it up. They're very helpful, especially if you have something like there's a schema for recipe, there's a schema for job posting, things like that. Okay, the third point is content refresh. Regularly update and refresh your content to keep it relevant and valuable, thereby improving your chances of being indexed and increasing your crawl frequency. Obviously, there are some things called evergreen content. And if you have anything like that, I would still say, you know, go ahead and make some changes to the content. Not just like move a few things here and there and just a last update it. This is something that was covered in the past where, you know, you need to make some meaningful changes, maybe rewrite the whole a block or a paragraph and add some new content and then update last refreshed it. Because if you just try to fool Google by like adding a few sentences here and there and not really change the whole page, Google is going to figure out that you are messing with the system, and eventually, you know, you're going to be penalized some way, shape, and form, and sometimes you would not even know. Okay. Next up, navigating Google's INP, which is Interaction to Next Paint. It's a new metric that Google has started using over first input delay as part of Core Web Vital metric, right? And Google has launched a tutorial on how to identify and rectify issues with interaction to next paint. INP is basically how long does it take for you to or for a user to basically interact with a portion of the web page that is being still loading, right? Again, it's the tutorial provides a step-by-step guide on using Chrome Dev Tools to diagnose and improve your website's INP score, a critical factor for SEO and user satisfaction. Now, again, this is not a direct ranking factor. This was, again, covered in the last episode, but it will help you. The goal is to achieve performance within the good threshold, representing the top 75th percentile of page loads by addressing issues like long-running JavaScript tasks, excessively main thread activity, and overly complex document object model structures. Again, if this is sounding too technical for you, then perhaps it's time for you to work with a reputable SEO professional or as well as a technology firm who can actually help you assess and figure out your INP score and help kind of get it up to speed. Now, remember, this is part of technical SEO. So it's not just one thing and you do and boom, you are on the top of the Google page. But every little bit helps, right? It's like you need to do workout, every little things, whether you do walking and a cardio, weightlifting, nutrition, proper recovery, sleep. All these things come into effect, play where you are really working on improving your fitness and achieving the becoming the best version of you can. And same thing with SEO. For lack of better, I think that's the only example that comes to my mind right now. With that, let's jump into the next one. The next one is debunking the myth on shared IP address and SEO. A long time. This was, I believe, was covered in the past, but it came up and John Mueller basically addressed it again. He's like, look, hey, if I have a server, if I'm on a shared hosting, do I get dinged because someone else is hosting, I guess, a bad site or something, you know, let's just say we are market and grow and we are hosting with another site that got penalized. Will that affect us? The short answer is no, because think about it. There are a lot of sites that use CDNs, content delivery network. When you use CDNs, you know, every other, hundreds of other businesses are going to have the same IP. IP addresses do not change, right? Especially when you use Cloudflare and things like that. So the question of you getting hit by SEO is kind of doesn't exist. Now, if you ask my own opinion, all I will say is that, yeah, you don't get hit by that. But at the same time, I wouldn't want your main business to be on a shared site. Now, obviously, you could argue with that and say, hey, what about Shopify? If I have a site with Shopify and 50,000 or 100,000 Shopify sites are on the same server, well, that is not quite true. The address that you see or if you do a reverse lookup, is you're going to see the CDN's address, right? Behind the scene, they have like, you know, Shopify has its own architecture and, you know, network of servers, which are, you know, highly available, redundant and fault tolerant and so forth. But to my thing is like, if you have a WordPress website, I would think, you know, you should stay. And if you're making a fair amount of money, I would say go ahead and shift your website. It's just going to be better performance overall. And when you have better performance, what this will mean is that you are going to be getting brownie points on the areas of technical SEO. Now, if you're on a shared site, and I will tell you, I have sites on shared personal sites. We have our business sites as well as other sites on shared hosting, shared IP, and we have been able to get those rank as well. So it's not absolutely you cannot do it and you're going to get banned or you're going to get spammy sites and things like that. That is not true. It's just that it's good if you can afford it. Lastly, YouTube has a new analytics feature that shows you new versus returning viewers. Basically, with this analytics update, creators now have the ability to see not just how many people are watching the videos, but whether these viewers are first time or loyal fans returning for more. That distinction is crucial for several reasons. For starters, it can help creators gauge the reach of their content and its appeal to a broader audience. More importantly, it offers actionable insights on how to balance or to attract new viewers while keeping the existing audience engaged. Okay. With that, let's go. Oh, this is the last one, which is the Google Ads strength metric. There are a few Google Ads professionals who basically said Google Ads strength metric is a utterly rubbish metric that does not really do anything. You can have an ad strength which is 100%, but that would not generally really help you, which is kind of true. Until Google's VP of Search and Commerce, Brendan Karaham, basically says, hey, that's not true, because if you're using PMax campaigns, then PMax campaigns uses ad strength, right? Which is kind of true, because, you know, imagine PMax is AI-driven strategy, and obviously AI-driven strategy, everything has to be number-based, so it's going to use what Google has, which is ad strength. Now, ad strength, in my opinion, has been hit or a miss, so, you know, but if you are going down the AI path, then you are basically going to have to rely on ad strength, because that's what Google is relying on. Okay, that's the gist of the discussion. Again, this was something that was reported on Search Engine Land. They contacted Google, and obviously Google's VP of Search and Commerce defended. Obviously, he works for Google. He's going to defend ad strength. He's not going to come and say, yeah, I work for Google, and I'm going to say, this is also bullshit. Don't use it. Right. However, what Karam is saying does make sense, which is if you're using Performance Max or any AI-driven strategy, then this is where the ad strength comes into play. Okay, already, folks, that's it for this week in marketing. I'm your host, Sajid. I am going to sign off now, and I shall see you all next week. Take care. Bye-bye.